Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you stream your video content. It's great to be with you again. We've got Allie Trost and Carter Augustine with us, and we have a big show for you today. We are going to preview Group D. That's the group that Sporting Kansas City were drawn into for the MLS Is Back tournament that is going to start in early July, as we are going to have soccer in the United States coming up here in the not-too-distant future. Previewing each team in the group, we're going to have Nick Beisler from Real Salt Lake. You might know that name. Cal Williams from Minnesota United. You might know that name. And Kai Kamara from the Colorado Rapids. You might recognize that name as well. So really excited about the guests we have coming up on the show. So we're not going to spend too much time in the opening segment here, but I do want to get a couple of thoughts in, guys, as we do have the draw in now. A couple of quick facts in case you have questions about this MLS Is Back tournament. It's going to start on July 8th and go through August 11th. There will be 54 matches played in 26 days in Orlando. You got the group stage games, which will be three of those for each team. Those games will count also toward the regular season standings when regular season play resumes after this tournament is over. And then, of course, there's going to be prize money on the line, $1.1 million worth of prize money on the line, and a berth in the CONCACAF Champions League for the winner as well. Guys, we were out there at Children's Mercy Park for the draw last week. Allie, I'll start with you. What did you make of the draw for Sporting Kansas City, or maybe thoughts on the draw overall across the league for MLS Is Back?
Yeah, well, first off, how random is it that, I mean, I feel like some of these rivalries were pretty, well, one, huge ones, and then two, highly anticipated. I know when they were polling for Group D and for the Western Conference as a whole, really wondering, oh, we're Sporting KC going to end up with Real Salt Lake, and as we know, that is the case. But no, I'm really looking forward to it, and I think what's really exciting for Sporting KC fans in particular is just how well-equipped and well-positioned Sporting that they really are going into this tournament. I mean, everything we've heard from Peter Vermees and what they've been doing to train, Kansas City has had some really hot days. So getting the guys well prepared for a really, really warm, humid Orlando climate. So I just think it's going to be really exciting. Love the format. And I think we've got a lot of great competition in each of the groups, and especially in that Western Conference. I know that two LAs ended up together as well. So it's just going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Carter, what stands out to you about the draw?
I'm with Allie. I'm really pleased with the fact I think every group has at least one really intriguing storyline slash rivalry matchup. And, you know, it's really funny to go through all the conspiracy theories in the internet about how random it was. And from the sound of things, they had an independent arbitrator. You know, you have Charlie Davies picking out the random. You know, it seemed pretty random.
The Easter eggs.
The little Easter eggs that he was working with. Shout out to Charlie Davis. Thought he did a good job, everything considered. But yeah,
I did see Carter. I saw him post on Twitter later with a glass of wine saying, really need this after a very stressful draw process. So
that would be super stressful, to be honest. And yeah, especially over Zoom, like you see the people doing it in person on the Champions League shows, and it's like world famous, you know, Ruud van Nistelrooy ever. And he's like trying to shake it and get like, yeah.
Hands are like shaking.
So I'm giving.
I like the Sharpie drawing the numbers on the little ping pong balls, yeah, too, you know?
Yep.
You know, I give them like an 8 or 9 out of 10 because I think only one piece of paper was upside down for all of the drawings, which, yeah, that's pretty good, considered.
Yeah, so I give him props. I give Susanna Collins props, the rest of the team props to put it on. But you got Toronto, Montreal. You've got Cincinnati, Columbus. You've got Orlando and Inter, which obviously wasn't part of the draw, but is still fantastic. And then, you know, there's matchups all over the place that I'm really excited for. I think the fact that all three group games are going to be towards the regular season is really exciting. And I thought the draw went pretty well overall. And again, yeah, it's a winnable group for, I think, all four teams in the group, and it's specifically to Sporting. You have the rivalry with RSL that's exciting. You have the nicest rivalry in soccer or whatever we want to call it with Minnesota, but we seem to get paired up with them in every single competition Sporting does. And then Colorado, a bunch of familiar faces like Diego Rubio and Kai Kamara.
Well, and I look at it this way, final thought maybe on this, is that we can't forget those two games in the start of the regular season. And Sporting has not only two wins, but two wins against Western Conference teams as well. If you can do some damage in the group stage here, you stand to have yourself racked up some points against Western Conference teams that will matter in the playoff standings if and when, assuming we get this regular season going. So I look at it like, look, this is a really great opportunity for Sporting KC to get themselves a big boost going into the regular season as well. And we know that when Peter Vermees is involved in something, if it's a competition, he's going to do everything he can to try to win this thing. Some of us wonder about how motivated certain teams will be versus others, if the analogy to the U.S. Open Cup is accurate at all in this one. Sporting Kansas City always tries to go win that thing. I think they're going to try to win this thing as well. So it should be a lot of fun coming up starting on July 8th. We're going to take a break. As I mentioned, we've got great local connections to all three of the opponents for Sporting KC. We're going to start with the group leaders, Real Salt Lake, coming up next, as Nick Beisler will join us from Sandy, Utah, right after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show. And the Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you stream your online content on video. We appreciate you joining us as we have a special Group D preview edition for you, as Sporting Kansas City, hopefully we'll find out what the actual schedule is this week, but for now, we do know the opponents in the group. Group D, which we're still working on the nickname of, I'm saying maybe the group of the Invincibles so far, because undefeated teams so far in this, two games into the season. And the first team we're going to preview for you in this one are the group leaders, the top of the group, Real Salt Lake. They got there because basically the teams that made it as semifinalists to the playoffs last year, and then the top-seeded remaining team in the West, and that is Real Salt Lake. And here to break down RSL for us is a Kansas City guy who is playing for Real Salt Lake. You might know him. He's got a familiar last name. Nick Beisler joins us from – are you in Salt Lake City itself? Are you out in the burbs, Nick? Where are you joining us from right now?
I am in Sandy, Utah right now, which is in the suburbs. It's probably a couple blocks further south of where the Rio Tinto is, where we play our games.
So convenient location for you. Is that where you train as well? Are you close to training as well?
It's about halfway in between training and the stadium, so it's a pretty good location.
Man, look at you. Efficient. First of all, how are you, man? How has life been through the pandemic? Have you been in Utah this entire time? Did you get to come home at all? What's the quarantine life been like for Nick Beisler?
Yeah, well, first of all, I've been pretty good, all things considered. I've stayed healthy. The people that I've been in contact with have all stayed healthy. So that's obviously the most important thing. And in terms of sanity, because that's kind of what's next, is I'm doing pretty well. I've found a few things that have, I've been doing that's passed the time. And now I think the last maybe 2 or 3 weeks, things have started to open up a little bit, so we can go outside a little bit more, and trying to lower my handicap on the golf course. But I've stayed in Utah the whole time, so it hasn't been too bad.
Well, you're not alone on the golf part. I feel like I know so many people who have been hitting the links. It's one of the most social distanced, I guess, activities you can do. But as far as fitness goes, I read that your assistant coach, Tyrone Marshall, said that he talked with the coaches, felt like you and the rest of the guys showed up in even better shape than you had for preseason. So how would you overall assess just where you and the rest of your team are at heading into this tournament?
I think we're in decent shape. It's always kind of hard to tell. I mean, when you're doing the runs and all the fitness stuff, it's really hard. And any player will tell you, it's really hard to kind of simulate a game-like kind of fitness. So we'll see. I feel like we've got a good foundation, I feel like. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to prepare to play in Orlando, in the middle of the season, however fit you are. it's always a hard place to play, and especially here in Utah, we can't simulate any kind of humidity, so it's going to be a challenge in itself.
What's it been like returning to training? And I know you guys had maybe added, I know Giuseppe Rossi has come in kind of an odd time for you guys in between this type. What's it been like getting back with the teammates in full training?
Yeah, the training is the best part. You know, there's still some things that, you know, just with the pandemic and everything, that don't feel normal in terms of, you know, eating with everybody and being in the locker room with everyone, lifting with everybody after training, because there's still those restrictions. But in terms of training, that's the best part. And it feels really good to be back on the field competing, because we've been on the field for a few weeks now, or months even, doing the individual and then the small group. But it's very hard to make that competitive. And then once you can kind of get to the full team training, that's where everyone's competitive drive starts to come out, and that's where the intensity of the trainings really bump up. So we're 2 days in, and they've been two good days so far.
Of course, you're two games into the season as well, and that seems like a long time ago. Obviously, this is going to be a complete reset, but as I mentioned, everybody's undefeated in this group. You guys got two draws. And by the way, you've already been to Orlando, right? Once at the beginning, and now you're going to get to go back down there in the middle of the summer. But I'm curious, you started in both games, played 90 minutes in the Orlando match. How did you guys – what was the feeling around RSL? There's always that mixed bag when you get a draw, but how did you guys feel about the way the season was started before the rug kind of got pulled out from under you?
Yeah, so I think anytime you can get a point away from home in Orlando, that's a good result, especially the first game of the season. You know, you don't really know what to expect. So going down there, I think we had a few of our guys injured, and we went in there with a plan and to not give up a goal on the road in Orlando, especially. We felt good about that. And then the following week, obviously at home, we wanted to, you know, show a little better performance in the attack, and we drew 1-1, but that was a game that, again, you know, you're okay with the point, but we really felt like we deserved 3 points. And at the end of the day, we were happy with our performance, but I guess not the result.
Nick, as we learned last week, Group D, some great rivalries in this group, specifically Sporting KC and RSL. Has there been any talk about preparing for some of these, what are going to be really exciting matches coming up?
I think in terms of talking with like our team and the technical staff, we haven't really dove into any matchups. It's more right now for our team just getting back into training and focusing on ourselves, because, you know, I'm sure when the time comes, we're going to prepare for how the other teams play. But, you know, so much of it with such a, you know, the time that we had off, it's going to come down to how we play and how, you know, obviously your own teams play. That's going to be the most important thing. But, you know, I'm sure as the weeks get closer, maybe some of the banter with my brother and some of the other teams will start to pick up, and we'll see what happens.
I was going to say, did you watch the draw, and have you talked to Matt yet about the draw, or maybe were you guys, do you have a group chat with your team? What was the initial reaction after learning of your guys' draw?
We did watch the draw as a team. Going into the draw, I think Demir Krylock said, he's like, we're going to be in the same group as Colorado, Kansas City, and I think Vancouver. So he was one team away, but I don't know. For some reason, we had a feeling like Kansas City for sure was going to be in our group, probably Colorado as well. And then, you know, we all thought the two LA teams were going to be in the same group too. And, you know, I know it was random, but it's just kind of funny how those matchups played out.
So with this whole MLS is back tournament, you're going to be the first, you know, sports league in the United States of the team nature to get back on the field. And it's bringing some fans that maybe, or people that are going to try this sport out, that are frustrated, the baseball's not back, et cetera. Seeing a lot of that in Kansas City. And so when the draw was coming out, I was tweeting about the rivalries for Sporting Kansas City in this group in particular. And somebody said, explain to me why RSL is a rival of Kansas City's. And I just responded with one word, and that was history. if you haven't been watching, you wouldn't expect RSL and Kansas City to be a rival. But if you've been around and you've watched what's happened between the two teams over the years, you understand it. I've never really asked you about this, and I'm curious. As a kid from Kansas City, obviously the brother of you know, maybe the face of the team in many ways, and Matt Beisler, who's now played in the rivalry too, but because of fate found yourself in the other side of it, that's got to be a weird experience, man. What's it been like for you, and what is it like for you every time you go up against the team that you grew up watching, a brother you were in college when he won the MLS Cup against RSL. What's the experience like for you when you go through this?
Yeah, so I think the more times we continue to play, especially with me being on RSL and him being on Kansas City, I think the more it hits me, like, how big this rivalry is. As a fan growing up when I was younger, it is kind of hard to grasp, you know, the rivalry, especially when I was off in college, I feel like that's kind of when the rivalry really picked up. So I didn't really grasp how big this rivalry was. And then when I went in Portland for 2 years, you still don't really understand. You kind of pick it up as a, you know, a player on a different team. But then when I come here, and then when you start to play, and just the intensity of each game, that's when it really hits you how much of a rivalry this is, even though it might not be a regional rivalry in terms of how close the teams are. But man, every single time we play one, it always feels like the game seems to be close. And I feel like the fouls are a little bit harder. There's a little bit more yellow cards, even red cards. And yeah, like the intensity from the fans, that's where it really becomes a big rivalry. The fans just have a strong dislike for each other, I feel like.
We'll be seeing a lot of that, I'm sure, on social media as fans won't be in attendance for the Orlando tournament. But you guys are heading down to Orlando. All the NWSL teams are heading to Utah. So what's the vibe been like there as NWSL gets set to kick things off here really soon?
I feel like everyone here is pretty excited about it. It's a lot of, you know, I think the staff and from kind of the people that I've talked to that are trying to get everything put together, it's a lot of work because it is a big tournament coming here and, you know, not a lot of time, kind of like the Orlando thing. I'm sure that they're all feeling that as well. But in terms of excitement, I mean, I'm pretty sure they've done a good job of mapping everything out, and I think it'll go pretty smoothly. But at the end of the day, it's more soccer to watch on TV, and I think that'll be a good thing.
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to that tournament as well. And all these leagues are starting up. I want to jump back real quick, Nick, on Nate talked about your guys' two draws to open the season. You also played against Sporting in the preseason down in Arizona. But does that feel like a whole different season to you? I mean, it feels like 10 years ago to me, the first two games of the season. How much can you take from your real preseason and the opening two games into now, a few months later, we're getting started back up into Orlando?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't know if I have an exact answer for that. I think we'll, you know, try to take a few things, but in my opinion, it almost kind of feels like you're just starting fresh. It almost feels a little bit like it almost is a preseason in itself again. Yeah. Although the games matter and they're much more important. But it's going to be one of those things too, where I feel like when the games start, it's going to be, we don't really know what's going to happen when we start, because it has been such a long break. You know, the difference between, you know, when you start preseason again, they're preseason games, so they don't really matter as much. So when you lose a game, you take things that you need to do better, and then you build on the things that you did well. Whereas these games will try to do the same thing, but each game that you lose or tie, the next game becomes that much more important. So it is going to be hard. I do think it is going to be a little bit of a roll the dice for a little bit, because we just don't know. And I don't think we can really take too much from the first two games.
So if you had to, and maybe it's not even a possible thing to answer right now, but with those two games of regular season play, being back in training, what would you say maybe are a couple of the things that you think RSL will be able to hang their hat on this year when it comes to your identity, any changes from last year, or something that maybe just you would use to describe how you think this team is going to play and win in 2020?
Yeah, so I think it'll be something that we'll build on or just, you know, continue almost is our defense. We had a really solid defense last year, our back six, and really the whole team, because that's how you have build a good defense is everyone's defending. But we're bringing back a lot of the same guys. I think our pretty much our whole back four is coming back, and then even the some of the guys that filled in at times in our back line are all coming back. And from what we've seen, and even from the first two games, I thought our defense was pretty solid. So, which is a good thing, especially because it's going to be in Orlando. And, you know, like I said earlier, we might not be as sharp. So if our defense is solid, then that should help us out, you know, in these three group games. But, you know, at the end of the day, we want to, it seems like the way we play is we're pretty solid at defense at home, and then on the road, and then we come home at Rio Tinto, our offense really starts to click. So I think that's something we need to improve on and build on, especially in this Orlando tournament.
Go ahead, Allie. We'll wrap things up after Allie.
I was just going to say one big thing that I know I'm really interested in seeing, and I'm sure you watched some Bundesliga games. The broadcast is a huge part of this whole coming together, bringing sports back, and a lot more mic access on the field. How do you feel about maybe being a bit more mic'd up with you and your teammates?
I think it'll be pretty cool for the fans. I think you can kind of – it's stuff that you would never get normally, right? And you don't really know the emotions that the players have on the field and really how intense and competitive things can get on the field. So I think it could be a cool experience for the fans. In terms of like playing, I don't think it'll really change much because you're probably not going to be thinking about that too much, but you know, we'll see.
Maybe we'll get an actual, you know, viewpoint into what it really is like to see two Beazlers yelling at each other on the field, you know, and because I've seen a couple of those moments in the games you guys have played, so that we get a window into that, right?
That'll make for some nice like Beazler family home videos down the line, right? Play that at Christmas, have everyone get to watch it over and over again.
Everyone except for my mother will watch that maybe.
I was gonna say, I think your mom probably is the one person who is more miserable when RSL and Sporting Kansas City play one another than anybody in the world these days, because she just, every time I see a picture of her, she looks incredibly stressed out, and there's no possible win for her because one of her kids is not going to be happy at the end of the game.
Yeah, that would have been good entertainment, is to have my mom get a little live cam with my mom when because I'm sure there was one, like, what the only thing that couldn't have happened is that's us being in the same group. And that would have probably been pretty entertaining.
Well, you know what? It's a good problem to have when two of your kids are successful professional athletes, and that's what she's got. And the third one, by the way, is a heck of a coach here in the Kansas City area as well. So shout out Mike Beazler on that one. Nick, thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it. And good luck down in Orlando, except for when you play Sporting, of course.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
There is Nick Beazler of Real Salt Lake. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Cal Williams, the voice of Minnesota United, and Kai Kamara of the Colorado Rapids as our Group D preview continues right after this. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and wherever you get your podcasts and stream your content. We appreciate you watching. We thank Nick Beazler for joining us in the last segment to preview Real Salt Lake in this Group D preview that we're doing. And now you see a beautiful, familiar face. Former voice of Sporting Kansas City and current voice of Minnesota United and all-around good guy, Cal Williams, who looks to be coming to us from his downtown Minneapolis apartment. Cal, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
Nate, very well. Thank you very much for all of you for having me. describing me as beautiful. I'm not entirely sure that's completely accurate. I'm going to tell my wife that, though, because she'll find that hilarious.
Yeah, no, she's almost as big of a fan of your facial expressions as me. And the beard's better than Carter's. I'm just going to go ahead and say it right now. Hey, before we get into the soccer stuff, Cal, you have been literally and figuratively at the epicenter of something that has been also literally sweeping the globe. And that is the social justice movement that started this time around, at least. I personally bristle at the idea that just one event started this. But the biggest event that led to this whole situation happened right there in Minneapolis, the murder of George Floyd. And the protests started there and have gone across the globe since then. And you've been involved. Can you just paint the picture for us what it's been like for you being right there in Minneapolis and maybe what the scene in Minneapolis is like now that we're a few weeks removed from the start, at least, of those protests?
Well, things have simmered now in Minneapolis, no doubt about it. But I will take you back a few weeks ago, Nate, where it was uncomfortable. There's no doubt about it, which I think is fine. We all need to be uncomfortable in this type of situation. I still can't believe that we have to have these kinds of conversations in the year 2020. We should never have had to have these types of conversations in the past before. But unfortunately, sometimes history is very bleak. Believe me, I'm British, I know. And I cannot believe that we are still at the stage as a human race where people legitimately think because they have white skin, they are superior. That thought process just simply does not register with me. And I can't believe that people still have that mindset. But as you mentioned, George Floyd was murdered here in Minneapolis, around about 10 minutes or so away from where my wife and I are in Minneapolis. And there were some really intense evenings. You could clearly hear the riots. You could see, I remember one night, you could see the glow of the fires that were taking place on an area called Lake Street, which is south of downtown Minneapolis. And as I said, it was uncomfortable, no doubt about it. But the fact that we still have to have this conversation, for me, I can't believe it. But the good thing is now, is like you were alluding to earlier on, the conversation is happening. It should have happened a long time ago. But now, perhaps as a human race, we can become more educated and we can start to make a real change. Maybe for the first time ever, we can really, really start to make a change.
Cal, what was the response from Minnesota United players, the organization? What were some conversations that you had with players and conversations that they maybe had internally with one another, with the coaching staff? How was the response from them?
I spoke to Aiko Parra, an individual that you will all know very well indeed, who obviously, he was emotional during this whole thing. And I think the club, to my knowledge, Ali, were doing everything that they could to support him and the other black players that are on the Minnesota United roster. And just being whatever shape or form that they needed to be to lend whatever it was that those guys needed. So I know Adrian Heath has been on the phone to a lot of the individuals, Aiko Parra, Raheem Sterling, Raheem Edwards, I beg your pardon, and Ja'Cory Hayes and a couple of others. And I just think the club were doing as much as they could, really, to offer whatever they could, whenever they could. The club has been deeply rooted in the community. There's been so many different projects where there's been food deliveries, and there have been situations where I know that there have been players turning up to what you would consider underprivileged people's homes and just putting a smile on their face. You know, the club is very proud of its roots and how deep it is involved in the community. And I think they've probably done just as good a job as any, and as they should, being as though it was right in the heart of this whole thing. So it's been an interesting few weeks, and I think the club should be commended for what they've done.
Definitely an interesting few weeks, Cal, all around the world, especially in Minneapolis and Twin Cities. And I, for one, definitely share your optimism in that this is a time where we can make some change for once. And so glad to hear that you share that viewpoint, as I'm sure many people do up in the Twin Cities area. Another, awkward subject change here, but another point of optimism now is we're starting to see some soccer back on the horizon. And of course, the reason we're having you on the show today is it's not the Open Cup, but Minnesota United and Sporting Kansas City are paired together yet again. What did you make of the draw for the Loons?
Where there's a will, there's a way. Kansas City and Minnesota will find a way to meet, won't they? Look, I think, first and foremost, look, well done to everybody who was involved in creating this tournament, because I can't really think of any other way to do it as well as it's been put together here. I know there was a suggestion that neutral venues were perhaps going to be an option at some stage, but you think about it, this is probably the best and the safest way to do this. So, in terms of the draw, I must admit I got extremely giddy when there was the prospect of competitive soccer on the tips of our fingers. I was very, very excited. And when the draw was made and I saw Minnesota were the penultimate team to be drawn, I thought to myself, put us in Group D. Please put us in Group D. Do not put us in Group F, because actually Group F at that stage held the two LA teams and Houston Dynamo, I believe. So that's, with all due respect, I say that, but I don't think anybody wanted to be in that Group F. For me, that's probably the group of death, if that's what we're christening it. In terms of the actual group, Group D, that both Minnesota and Kansas City find themselves in, it's competitive. I don't think there's a standout winner. I think both Minnesota and Kansas City would back themselves to finish top of the group. You could even put Colorado in that conversation as well, because it's interesting, because people talk about Colorado Rapids very much like the 2019 iteration. Well, they've changed considerably during the offseason. Robin Fraser's done a fabulous job in putting that roster together. And I'm very excited to see the likes of Yunus Namli playing with Shinya Shiki and Jonathan Lewis and our old friend Kai Kamara as well. So the Rapids are actually a decent outfit this year, and I think they're going to be much more difficult to get the better of than many people have suggested. Real Salt Lake, I must admit, and I'm happy to be wrong, but without Jefferson Savarino, who was obviously now plying his trade in Brazil, there isn't much to be excited about, in my opinion. There's one or two individuals that you would say, okay, you know, they're good players, and I'm a big fan of Freddy Juarez. I think he's deserving of the opportunity at RSL, but I must admit I'd be surprised if they advanced. I think it's between Kansas City and Minnesota for sure.
Okay, so that's pretty good rundown of the group itself. Let's talk about your squad, Minnesota United, and we talked about this earlier. All the squads are undefeated in this group, and Minnesota United, 2-0. You got a 3-0 win over Portland to start things off, then a 5-2 drubbing of San Jose in the second week. We've been talking about this as well. That seems like a long time ago. I mean, the entire world has changed literally since that happened. But how encouraging was that start for Minnesota United, and what do you think they can build upon going into this this new iteration of the season?
Well, it was exceptionally encouraging, Nate, because it was the best start Minnesota United had had, not only from a points point of view, but also from a footballing point of view. It was the best stuff they'd ever played. And I think it's finally come to the realization of a lot of people in Major League Soccer now that Minnesota United are actually a very good outfit and are no longer that team that are perhaps at the end of the jokes, and they're no longer viewed as a punchline, which I understand they very much were in the first two seasons. Season three was a complete change, and veterans were brought in, Ike Opara being one of them. Ozzy Alonso was phenomenal. We, of course, had the former Arsenal goalkeeper, Vito Minone, for a while as well, who was magnificent, MLS Goalkeeper of the Year. And during this past off-season, there were one or two things that needed to be mended, perhaps even upgraded. The loss of Vito Minone was a shame, but I actually think we may very well have upgraded in the shape of Tyler Miller, who I believe as a goalkeeper will be in and around the US squad for a long time. I'm not suggesting he's going to be the number one, but I think he'll be in and around that US roster for a while with the likes of Bill Hamid, Sean Johnson, and what have you. But I think the main area where Minnesota really needed a change was up front, because they didn't have a natural goal scorer for some time. You could argue the last natural goal scorer that Minnesota had was arguably Christian Ramirez, who himself didn't have a particularly glamorous spell in Minnesota colours in Major League Soccer, and even he will admit that. But Luis Amarilla came from nowhere, really, and it's a loan deal with a view to a permanent deal, which I suspect that deal will be made permanent at some stage, should he carry on how he started. 3 goals in the first 2 games, and he looked unplayable. He looked very, very good with the run in between the fullback and the centre half. His movement off the ball was exactly what Minnesota United were looking for. And you know, the one thing which it's a shame that, you know, I understand why Minnesota traded Darwin Quintero, but the one thing now that Minnesota miss, and hopefully they will get it, is a number 10 to play off of Amarilla. Now, the debate is there whether or not Kevin Molino can answer that call or not. I personally think he's better out wide. But the one thing now, because of Amarilla and his movement off the ball, is when he plays off the shoulder, he actually forces the opposing back line to drop back a bit. And when they drop back, that obviously means a lot of space for the number 10. So I do wonder if Minnesota just, you know, whenever we have a transfer window ahead of us, we don't know when it's going to be, or even if there's going to be a transfer window this season. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I think Amarilla is one to watch for. I'm a big fan of Molino. Robin Lurt, the Finland international, is also a handy player as well when he fancies it. So Minnesota have got a strong squad, arguably the best squad they've had since coming into Major League Soccer.
Cal, the tactics, the talent, that's one thing, but the fitness is going to be a key differentiator for teams going into this tournament. And how well positioned physically is Minnesota heading into this tournament?
Well, Ali, I can't imagine they're any worse than anybody else at the moment. This is the one thing where I think a lot of teams will have an equal playing field, if you will, because there's a lot of teams that have not really had the chance to get themselves ready properly. And you know, I think it's one of those situations where, look, you can do all you can and what you want at home and work out and keep fit from that aspect. But it's actually, from a footballing point of view, it's the sharpness where a lot of people will lack. I don't think we're going to see anybody at 100% during this tournament. It's impossible. You know, we may very well see one or two exhibition games before the tournament starts. There's rumours already starting that could happen, and that's a good thing. But I don't think we're going to see anybody in tip-top shape during this tournament. That doesn't mean we won't see good soccer, because I must admit, I've said this a few times now, whilst I think Minnesota will very much be up there towards the top end of the group, Kansas City, for me, I think if they really want to, can go a long way. And I say that, and Carter, you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong here, because I remember doing a couple of preseason games with Sporting down in Orlando at this very facility. And if the games are played at the field I believe they're going to be played at, which is the main field at the soccer part of the facility, I remember the pitch being quite tight. Now, if that is the case, I would assume the likes of Johnny Russell, and if it is Daniel Shalloway, or maybe it's Fernandez, I don't know, I would assume they would get a lot more of the ball. And I think somebody like Johnny Russell would absolutely take advantage of that. So I could see Kansas City scoring a lot of goals. We got a glimpse of Pulido, didn't we, at the start of the season, who I think is a fabulous signing. But I think the front three for Kansas City will arguably be one of the best in this tournament.
Well, you talked about the tournament setup, and it's in Orlando. Have you heard any chatter around the team or anyone about just – I think it's really fascinating that we have this World Cup-type setup, which is going to be really fun for fans to be able to watch every single day a couple games. All the teams are in close quarters. But what's different, obviously, is the World Cup, some of the group games don't matter. All these group games are going to be hugely consequential, even if it's the third group game and you're eliminated. Have you heard any discussion about that, or what do you think about the fact that the group stages will go towards the MLS regular season?
I think it's great. I think it's a very smart move by the league. I think the only difference between this and a World Cup tournament is that you and I, Carter, won't be in a bar somewhere watching the games. But I think it's a smart move by the league, no doubt about it, because that was the one issue that a couple of the players had, was that, okay, are we going to play this tournament in Orlando where this deadly virus is still around? Are we going to play a meaningless tournament? So it'll be interesting to see. But here's my, if I am going to play devil's advocate, here's my, my counter thought here. I do wonder how many teams will think after the group stage, if they've gotten, you know, whatever the points margin they seem and deem acceptable, once they've got that, how many are going to be interested in the whatever the prize money is now, because I've heard several different numbers. Are they going to be interested in the Champions League spot? Is the Champions League spot deemed worthy enough for such an escapade? Would it really surprise any of you if a team of some sort gets what they want from the group stage, gets to the knockout round and says, we're okay, we're good. We've got what we needed from this tournament. Now we're going to go back to our own home comforts and essentially have a training camp for the next 3 months until what the assumption is that we'll restart the regular season in our own markets. Now, I'm interested to see what happens there. I'm not suggesting anybody will do that, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did. The one team that I think are going to really give it a go, having spoken to one or two people down there, I think Inter Miami are going to really give it a go. And they're in a tough group because they're in that group with six teams, remember. And I think after speaking to several people down there, they want to get to the Champions League as quickly as they can. You have to think of the fans they're trying to attract, the players they're trying to attract, and the team they're trying to become. The Champions League makes complete sense for them. Can you imagine Inter Miami hosting Club America at this brand spanking new stadium that looks unbelievable when they get to it, or even at the stadium in Fort Lauderdale? The Champions League will be humongous for Inter Miami. And obviously, prize money plays its part as well. But there's all sorts of theories and queries and all sorts of different things we can talk about here. But the simple fact of the matter is we, as broadcasters, have had two games to make our predictions and take a real look at the teams that we have in front of us. So everything I've just said could be complete nonsense. So who knows?
Hey, that's what makes it fun. We're going to all find out how this thing goes. What I love about it is this is the time for experimentation. You have that reason, that excuse almost, to try stuff that hasn't gone before. And if it doesn't come off, I think people will be able to say, hey, they gave it a shot. And if it does come off, maybe there's some new great things that come out of this. And one thing's for certain, it's going to be a unique experience, something we haven't ever seen before in this country or maybe even in the world when it comes to soccer, the way this tournament's going to go down. So we'll see. And we got some rivalries to kick it off in Group D. Cal, thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it. And we look forward to the days where you and Carter can go to a bar together again and drink and watch World Cup soccer, because those days, they are in front of us. We just have to hang in there until those days come back. Thanks for the time, Cal. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Nate. Ali, you're more than welcome to come to the bar as well.
Hey, I'm in.
And as the old man, I'll sit on my deck and watch the games with my beer.
Hey, we'll Zoom you in.
Thank you very much. Just turn the volume up. I would actually join you guys at the bar for a World Cup game. I would love that. That sounds awesome. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the last group or the last team in Group D. Kai Kamara joins us to talk Colorado Rapids right after this. All right, we're wrapping things up, and I'm not going to say we saved the best for last because I don't want to offend Cal or Nick Beisler, but some people might say we saved the best for last because we have Kai Kamara, Sporting Kansas City legend, but now legend with the Colorado Rapids, joining us on the show now to close out this Group D preview to let us know what's going on with the Colorado Rapids. But before we get started, Kai, first of all, how are you, man? It's good to see you.
I love how you choose them, actually. Nick Beisler and, you know, Cal. That's a pretty good selection, but you saved the best for last.
I'm going to let you say it. There we go. Yeah, that's right. So, hey, before we get started on the real serious stuff, pandemic, you know, has caused us all to branch out and do different things and try different things. And you know that I'm calling the games along with Carter now with Jacob Peterson. He's calling games with us. And every time I've tried to text him during this pandemic, he texts me back and says, sorry, I can't talk right now. I'm out running because I'm trying to keep up with Kai Kamara. He's challenging people to run. I don't know how he's doing it, but he's crushing me, and I got to keep up. So tell me about this challenge you did with people about running during the pandemic.
Shout out to Jake. I love that, man. Awesome. It's just so amazing how we can motivate each other, you know? The lockdown, it's just brutal, but you just have to stay active. The first one I actually started doing was the plank challenge. You know, if somebody say you can do a 7-minute plank, you say, get out of here. What do you, you know, but for a month doing all these planks. And then at the end of the month, we're able to get to, you know, 7 minutes. It was just like a breeze. And then somebody else, I was like, okay, this is done. What's next? They go, 100-mile challenge. You have to run, you know, 100 miles in this month of May. And I was like, okay. So that was the May mile run. Some of the beautiful runs I actually did was when I woke up, 5, 6 in the morning, and then just nice breeze. So Jake, I'm proud of you. So I did finish the May mile run, but, tough times, because the last day when I finished it was the day when, you know, all the protests and everything started. So I wasn't really able to, you know, then, you know, brag with my friends and say, hey, congrats, we all did it. So, yeah.
So, no, I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was exactly where we wanted to go next, Kai, is the situation that we find ourselves in the world right now from a social justice perspective. And look, every person has their own set of circumstances that they bring to the table. Whether you're a young Black person growing up in the United States, different communities, a person such as yourself coming from another country, living that American experience. And so, look, it's something we could spend the whole show talking about, because it's so important and it's such a big deal. But how would you characterize this experience for you, what you've been through, and where you are emotionally right now in this whole situation?
Yeah, no, definitely. We can spend the next couple hours to talk about it. But again, I moved to the U.S. at the age of 16, and I felt like this is the best blessing that could have ever happened to me, a kid growing up in Sierra Leone, a war-torn country, and finally get the opportunity to say, here, go to America, the best country in the world, which I still believe it is, you know. And when these things are going on, and the kind of things that we've gone through, or myself personally have gone through living in the U.S., you know, it's one of those where you just wanted to keep in the back of your head, because they say just accept it and move on. You know, this is how things will be. This is how things will be. So it's good and positive. And I am very thankful for not just, you know, just the people that's been out there just, you know, doing the protest. It's just everyone from different races that actually does feel it deep inside of them now, that to say, listen, the color of our skin should not differentiate how we treat each other. You know, and to me, that's why this one feels so special. I want to, you know, always say thank you to the people that fought so hard before for myself, a Muslim immigrant, you know, to a Black Muslim immigrant to come to America and be a professional soccer player and, you know, and achieve so much, you know, thankful to them. And hopefully that's the, you know, more thanks we can give to whoever is out there and, you know, trying to make sure that we change the world right now. Because whatever happens in the U.S., I believe, you know, again, I'm not a philosopher, but I believe whatever happens here in the U.S. is going to trickle to different countries. Because in soccer, we've seen it. We've seen, you know, discrimination happens a lot, you know, around the world. But the U.S. is so powerful that I believe that what we can do here will definitely, you know, speak to the rest of the world and help change.
Kai, such powerful words. But in, like you said, I hope that this does, and it already has reached other countries across the world, and hopefully change is coming really soon. But I want to go back to some of those challenges, planks, miles. It sounds like you've been getting your fitness right ahead of the tournament, regardless of what the back to training, you know, things looked like with Colorado. So let's talk about that fitness, because that's going to be a really big thing for a lot of teams going into a tournament in Orlando, of all places, with the humidity and the heat. How well prepared do you feel for the fitness aspect of this tournament?
Me, I'm good. I'm just trying to be 21 again. That's all, you know.
Aren't we all?
I'm just, yeah. But, I mean, it's good to be up here. Really, when I was running around, I just thought it really does feel good to run up in altitude, you know, and it's hot. It's all this. But Orlando, it's going to be different, you know. It's tough, because even in your off season, you're still playing. You're still, you know, getting together with other guys and playing. This is the first time to really be shut down for 3 complete months without having team, you know, training, team football, or five or six guys even going to the park and playing together. So there's a lot of rust to it. Fitness-wise, you know, we're back in training and we've tested ourselves. We've, you know, which I don't even know why we're still doing beep tests, by the way. I'm too old for this. But we did that and everybody came in really fit, which is good. So we're ready for it, but it's still going to be kind of a rust, you know, everybody in Orlando, definitely.
Did you guys all watch the draw together then, or did you have a group text going on? And what did you think when you saw it?
I hinted at that, you know, to be honest. But I think we're all the CBA stuff that was going on with the league, we had way too many Zoom meetings and nobody wanted to have another meeting because it was every day, you know, hey guys, meeting tonight. So I was like, hey guys, anybody want to get on the Zoom meeting so we can watch this draw? And they were like, no more Zoom.
Yeah, you can sort that out, find out who the teams are, and then get together in person later. Hey Kai, you've mentioned a couple of times, you've joked about your age a couple of times. I wish I was 21 again. And one of the things Jacob Peterson said to me is, this guy, I don't know if Kai's ever going to age. 35 years old, and you're still scoring double-digit goals every year. You open up the season with another goal right off the bat this year. I mean, Wando's about the only other guy that can hang maybe in that category. What is it, man? How have you stayed so young and productive when most guys are starting to hit the twilight of their career?
I'm happy. And I came into Kansas City at the right time. I consume all those barbecues and, you know, they actually help, you know, keep me young. But, you know, obviously my family being all from Kansas, so we kind of keep that in us. No, I was just happy, really. You know, I've been blessed to really be able to play soccer for a living. And, you know, coming again, Echo, coming from Sierra Leone, Civil War, America, school, and then soccer, playing in England. And, you know, again, that I talk about the stadium in KC. So all those things just continues to just make me feel like, you know what, I was, you know, put around to do this. So I just try to keep myself happy. And I believe when you're happy, it keeps you young. And I don't feel myself slowing down. I just continue. But one of the motivations, really, it's my, you know, my three kids. Now I have a 4-month-old because I was like, got to play 3 more years because she has to watch me play. So I know. So that's how I kind of push it sometimes.
Well, you're on the right track, at least from what it looks like with Jacob Peterson and then what we've seen on the soccer field. But Sporting fans are going to be looking forward to seeing another familiar face in Diego Rubio. What's it been like playing with him in even a short amount of time? And what's the chemistry like between you two?
Yeah, it's good. Whenever you're in the locker room and see somebody that you can make a connection with, you know, even though me and Diego didn't play together in KC, but, you know, I watched after my time was done there and seeing what he did there. So we do have that connection. We do have those conversations. And even if we're last year when we're going back to Kansas to play, you know, we have game plans and conversations. It's a knowing, hey, you know, we know Beasley, yeah? We know what he does, and we know this guy. We know Roger. We know what he does. So, you know, we kind of share those information. The one time it didn't work out, actually, was when I was playing for New England, and me and Namath had that game plan going in, and he gets the red card in the first, you know, so that didn't work. But, no, it's good to have Diego around. He's such an energy. He buzzes around all over the place, but it's good. And, you know, that's one thing, because even before the draw was made, he just kept talking about, you know, okay, we get there. Do we get to hang out with some of the guys from the other team? I was like, I know, Diego, you want to hang out with all the KC guys. And then now we get put in the same group. So it's just perfect. Yeah.
We talked about this with Nick Beasley, Kai. It seems like those first two games were years ago. So much has happened in the world. And you guys started the season so well. You have a new head coach this year, which I think a lot of people might not really know what this year's Colorado Rapids team is all about. First, I want to start with your head coach, Robin Frazier. What's it been like playing for him? And he is one of only two black coaches in the league, him and Thierry Henry at the moment. Does that does it mean a little bit more, or what, is there a connection there that seeing him in a place where, like I said, there's only two black coaches right now?
Yeah, Robin's, you know, he's a veteran when it comes to the coaches. Definitely the one that, you know, people can look at and say, yes, maybe the only black coach in the league before Thierry came in. But, you know, Robin's been around. Yeah, if anybody could remember Chivas USA, which probably a lot of people don't, but that's how long Robin's been around. He has a really good soccer, you know, brain, you know, which is awesome. Obviously, he did that with Toronto and, you know, proves with what they did over there. So he comes in here. He's really easy to work with. You know, he's really easy to work with. He's a guy that understands the players. So he knows how to pass on information, but he's very disciplined, like when it comes to how he wants the ball to be passed and from this side to the next side. So, and that helps us out. I mean, he came in end of the year last year. So that was a little bit of something that we know coming into this year, it's going to be, you know, something different. And obviously that's how we've shown in the first couple games we played. Sucks that we, you know, everything stopped for a bit. So he took off that little momentum that we really wanted to get going. But, you know, he passed on his information, right?
Well, it seemed like he made a difference right away when he came in last year, too. I mean, the production started changing. I know sometimes when there's a coaching change in the middle of the season, maybe that gets guys' attention a little bit. But it looked like you guys were carrying that over into this year as well. What changed? I mean, was there something in specific that he really instituted right away when he took over the locker room?
I think it's game plan. Every coach has their own game plan, but the one that he brought in kind of, you know, suited the players. He suited the locker room, you know, kind of well. And we were going, you know, in different places before and how we were playing. No disrespect to the game plans that was in plan for us before, but it just didn't suit the team as well, you know, with the players that we have around us. And his game plan that he brought in just ended up being perfect that, you know, it could suit most of the players that we have around us. We don't need, you know, the big special, you know, difference makers, players that can really do stuff. His game plan that's something that's put together that helps everybody. Doesn't matter skill level, really. It helps everybody just combines right. And, you know, it helps with the chemistry of the team.
Speaking of game plans, now that you know your opponents in the group, any game planning happening in advance right now? Nick Beasler said that with Real Salt Lake, they're going to maybe just focus on themselves for right now. But have you guys already started plotting out against your opponents?
I think so. I think right when you put the groups together, we've definitely started thinking, okay, how do we play against this team? How do we play against that team? You know, looking at Minnesota, yes, we had, you know, the games that we have against them last year. And definitely those are some things we're going to have to look to, because right now it's a new season, to be honest. You know, KC, I have to say, you know, it's top of the list when we think about the teams, you know, because it's a team that's so disciplined that really does have a game plan just like us. And, you know, they consistently keep doing the same things that they've been doing, you know, but we have the rivalry with Salt Lake and, you know, we look forward to that. But, you know, it's weird. I'm definitely going to say, man, our group is a tough group. But I know all the other teams are saying the same things with their group. But that's what, you know, it's going to be a good competition.
Yeah, and a once-in-a-lifetime one, I think, obviously, with what's going on. Is there some sort of – I know when you're in the middle of it, it's kind of tough to think about. But, I mean, it's a World Cup-type setup with the teams. But the group stage games go towards the regular season. Are you excited from that aspect that this is maybe a once-in-a-lifetime tournament?
Yeah, definitely. I actually think the World Cup-style setup is going to be really good. You know, play those three games at first that could count into our season, which we're hoping that we do have a season after this, so you can translate and get to there. But just the experience, just to say 2020, it's been a weird 2020, you know, that you were part of it. It's just like the COVID training that we were doing before. You know, it was optional and I could have just stayed home with the three little ones, but I was like, you know, I want to be part of it. I want to see how it really goes, this social distance training. So I can say, you know what, I did that way back in the days, you know, but so that's what this is. It's really weird. We're going to go into this place and, you know, social distance and how everything is going to go. You know, we're really looking forward to it, but at the same time, there's a lot at stake. Even preseason when we play against each other with little tournaments in maybe Scottsdale, Tucson, or wherever it is, one team wants to win it all. And I want to say, you know, my team is not going there to say, hey, we just want to show up, you know, because if we're going, we want to play.
Well, Kai, I know you're going to be missing those kids and Kristen as well while you're gone. But young Carter Augustine is going down there as our representative for Sporting KC. So maybe you could take him under your wing and you can kind of parent him a little bit. You know, keep an eye on him. Make sure you raise him the right way while you're down there in Orlando. Can you do that for us?
You got it. You got it. Can you clean boots? Do you know how to clean boots?
I can clean boots. No 7-minute plank.
I'm just hoping, seriously, I mean, it's going to be something so different, but I'm just hoping we're able, this is once in a lifetime, really, like you said, like a World Cup or Olympic, that we're all going to be in one place at the same time. Like, hopefully we're all the testing going, you know, positively, positively, that we're able to mingle, because, you know, so we can share some stories, because again, about everything that's going on around the world and in America, now we all get to be in this one place together. Hopefully we're able to share story and able to bond together.
I love that perspective. That's the perfect way to close out this show. I'm a little envious, actually, because we're going to be back in Kansas City calling the games from the studio here. And I know it's going to be tough. I know it's a sacrifice for all you guys to be away from your family, but that attitude is perfect. This is once in a lifetime. We're going to be talking about this for years and years and years to come. And so, Kai, safe travels. Good luck. Thanks for joining us. It's great to see your face again, man. Hang in there. We're all supporting you, okay?
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I love you, Kansas City.
All right, and that's going to do it for us on this edition of the Sporting KC Show, the Group D preview with Nick Beisler, Cal Williams, and Kai Kamara. Hey, those guys are all going to be Kansas City family no matter where they are, so we appreciate them being on, and we appreciate you guys joining us. For Carter and Allie, this is Nate Bucati. We'll see you again next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.